right, Lee Zeldin, Laura Ahern, and Harvey Levin, all from TMZ. The rest of the way. First, though, we bring up attorney John Ray. He's part of a pretty good team out in the Miller Place area, Ray Matevin Associates, involved at this point in time with the Wally Backman case out in Riverhead. Maybe we can have a word or two on that a little bit later on, but very much involved and has been like no other with the Gilgo Beach murders. And John, nice enough to join us once again on the program. Sir, how are you?
Fine. Good to hear from you. How you doing, Jay?
Great having you. Great having you aboard, John. You know, I got word, you know, as always, as we are the news leaders here on the island, I got word of a situation regarding Gilgo, maybe a little bit of a break in the case. I got all kinds of stuff floating in. And, you know, one of the things was when the police department had their press conference last week and told us of a piece of evidence that they felt after 9 years they pretty much would portray to the public. You have been working feverishly behind the scenes and everything else, and you were at the center. We spoke a little bit. You were at the center of this news that I got as far as maybe a break in the case. You know, everybody's been wondering with the initials embossed on this belt, HM, could be the other way, WH. We were trying to figure out all kinds of crazy stuff. And then word came through, and then you and I spoke, and then thus our conversation right now, and you were at the center of it all as far as the releasing of this information. Talk to me a little bit.
Yes, what happened was I held a press conference at 11:15 at the police headquarters. Then the police held theirs at 1 o'clock, and at that conference they displayed a photo of these initials that were allegedly embossed on a belt. They didn't show the belt nor the dimensions. They wouldn't describe it. They would say nothing else about it, except that it had been found in the initial stages of the investigation in connection with the investigation, and it was not one of the victim's belts. They knew that, and that the suspect had probably handled the belt. That's as much as they would tell. But at my press conference right before that, I had said, I didn't know about the belt, but I had said that one of the big issues here that should be investigated is the fact that the former chief of police, Jim Burke, was an aficionado of, or dilettante, shall we say, of prostitutes. There are several prostitutes who I personally interviewed and some whom I've represented because I help out people in this case who's ever in it. That came forward and said, you know, Burke is he is devoted to prostitutes in the worst way. He, you know, he uses them. And so when you take that fact, and this man is in charge for years of the police investigation of dead prostitutes, you might think that there's something wrong with that. And then I went on to explain that in one case, a prostitute who was running a ring of prostitution out of Burke's home and living with Burke for on and off for 10 years had a beeper, and the ring was run from the beeper, and the police should have they knew this, they should have known this. What are they doing? Well, it's that person who has the initials HM. So when the reporters came out of the press conference and said, look, who's this WH or HM, I right away thought of her, but I just wanted to make sure of my notes. So I went back. I had to go to the city, so I went back the next day to my office, got the notes. Sure enough, everything I had thought was in there. And I then informed the police department. I wrote a letter to them explaining the circumstances and to the chief of homicide, as well as some of the circumstances of the real Mary Gilbert, not the one portrayed in the Netflix and what that might have to do with this case dealing with witchcraft. And, you know, we'll see. So the police were interested. I got the clear impression that unequivocally that the police had never investigated the angle of this girl's connection with Burke in relation to Oak Beach or Beach case. They had investigated this Burke's relationship with this woman only because the ex-husband of this woman reported the relationship to the Internal Affairs Bureau of the Suffolk County Police. And years ago, back in 1999 or so, they did an internal affairs investigation of that situation, but nothing in relation to the murders. So they still have to do that. So this fellow, the ex-husband, he's come forward. He's been on the radio now. I spoke to him at length. Again, you know, we had met before. I had all his transcripts. Burke actually testified in his divorce. He was called in to testify as a witness in a divorce from this woman. And I had independent, coincidental confirmation of the nature of this woman and the business that was being run out of a house in Ronkonkoma. I had somebody who was actually involved, very credible person, a middle-level police person who was involved with that situation. So I've reported that to the police as well. It's interesting because Loretta Rickenbacker, one of Burke's other girlfriends, who was a prostitute, African-American girl, he formed a relationship with Loretta, and they had a child together, and they would go to this house. She told me, I became her lawyer, by the way. So she told me that they would go to this house in Ronkonkoma, where they would smoke crack. So unbeknownst to the public, Chief of Police Burke was also a crackhead.
Notch in his belt, by the way. Yeah.
So the belt is the belt. We do know that this lady did emboss her initials on other clothing. I've been able to learn that. But more than that, right now, it's really up to the police to follow that lead, if there is one. If this belt is a male belt, then that lead may be not a lead at all. Maybe another of the many, many coincidences in this case.
But
if
it is a
female belt, you know, they should look.
Let's go, because when I found out about this and everything else, and you mentioned the individual, the husband, I mean, let's just throw the names out there. Guy Malone is his name, correct? Now,
Guy Malone, it was a great
interview. I heard a 45-minute interview by our own Frank McKay. Brilliant interview.
Right.
And it really delved into the story of now Guy's ex-wife, Heather Malone. Now, folks, you know,
correct.
Obviously, Heather Malone with the initials HM. It kind of makes sense. Those are the initials now. You know, we kind of said, well, what could these initials be when it was first shown by Suffolk County Police last week at the press conference? Is it the other way around? Is it WM,
right.
WH? Is it well, HM now makes sense as we try and put this massive puzzle together as far as the initials, Heather Malone. There you go. Now, Heather Malone, as John just said, had a relationship with the former chief of police, James Burke, the prostitution ring and everything else, and here we go. Now we're starting to get maybe a bit of a clearer picture here, John, correct?
Yeah, well, the word is maybe because, you know, it could be a coincidence. There's a lot of coincidences in life, and there's been a lot in this case. So it could be. We can't just say, aha, this is it. We got it. It's dead. This is over. We nailed it. We don't really know that. It will be up to the police to know that. But you know, there's an HM. There are thousands of people with those initials on Long Island. She's certainly suspect in this regard. But more than that, we don't know yet, right? I mean, you have to be honest. Evidence, always evidence. That's my rule, and I don't jump to conclusions. I draw inferences and then follow them. So that's one inference, and we can follow that one. That's what we should do. But that's really up to the police to do. She lives up in, I think, Rhode Island. She has a number of aliases, and she has many phone numbers. 13 different phone numbers, I might add. Why that is, I don't know. So it needs to be followed. But I followed that trail years ago when I met with Guy Malone at length and got all of his evidence, and years ago presented that to the police. So it's been out there. I mean, you know, another side note is how in God's name, forget about Spoda's promotion of Burke, how in God's name could the hierarchy in the Suffolk County Police Department not perceive, as Burke was climbing the ropes to the top, not perceive that he was involved deeply in prostitution when he's living with a woman who was running a ring out of his house. By the way, the beeper is registered to Jane Burke. There is no Jane Burke at 2 Samus Court in St. James, and but there is a James Burke who lives there. That's our guy. So, you know, how could this be ignored? Here he is. He's got Loretta Rickenbacker, who he dresses up and struts around at police affairs as he's going up the ranks, and then Heather Malone as well. So, I can't fathom how they could have missed this. And he's a crackhead to boot. How could they have missed this? They couldn't have missed this. So there's far more people involved in Burke, rather than Spoda, who promoted Burke up the ranks. There's far more people who are inculpated in that part of it.
Let's stop right there. I'll tell you how they could have missed. Could have, okay? Could have. And that is, you know, listen, we just got done with the whole Spartal McPartland, the association deal. I mean, could you have any more of an affiliation with the DA and the chief of the police department and everything else? My goodness, you know, we talk about cover-ups and everything involved here.
Yeah, but
there's
a blackmail situation, or sometimes I say an inverse blackmail situation that existed as Burke climbed the ranks, and that is that if you look at the Spoda trial, the top three officials, police officials who testified and were cross-examined, three out of three were in adulterous relationships. Three out of three. So people say, well, that's their private business. You know, that's America. We could do what we want. All that may be true, except when you're a person with a gun and you have authority and you're at the top of the people who have those guns and authority, you can easily be blackmailed when you're having those kinds of relationships. Three out of three. So what happens is they're in a position where, and the police do it all the time, where they're told, you know, do toe the line, do what we say, or you're going to be exposed. And they know that. It's tacit. It's not necessarily expressed. But the inverse part of that kind of blackmail is this. I'm in an adulterous relationship. You're in an adulterous relationship. I won't say anything about yours. You don't say anything about mine. We all get along, and we just ignore our sexual personal relationships. You can't do that in a case where we're involving prostitutes. You just can't. And that's what happened in the Suffolk County Police Department. It's very obvious from the Spoda trial that that's what happened. So all these people looking the other way is because they were dirty themselves. They were defective themselves. And that was true up and down the ranks. So that there needs a house cleaning over there for that reason. Now, a lot of those people apparently have retired, but not all. And somebody's got to look at this. You know,
John,
I'm sorry to be. It's, I'm not being a moralist. I'm being a pragmatic lawyer when I tell you that.
But let's not forget the power. We're talking with John Ray, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Attorney John Ray. Let's not forget the power that the association had there. I mean, just look what we have learned from the Spoda deal. Okay, people were shaking in their boots when they confronted Burke. They were worried about their careers, their families, their lives.
Lives, I can tell you fellow who I spoke to who came forward, who had the relationship with Heather Malone, independent of Guy Malone. Guy does not even know this man's name, but I know his name. He came forward. He was scared for his life of Burke, even when I told him, well, Burke is going to jail, and he said he can reach out from jail. He is that afraid of Burke, and so he would not allow me to disclose his name. But he came forward. He had a personal relationship with her, and she tried to recruit him into her ring of prostitutes. She was running male and female prostitutes, and he didn't bite it. He didn't go for it, but she made that attempt. So that evidence is real, and Guy Malone is not just a bitter, sour ex-husband who was cheated on. He's talking about things that I was able to independently confirm.
Talking with John Ray, attorney. We're talking about Gilgo. We're talking about the belt that was found, the possibility of those initials being connected to a woman who helped run a prostitution ring out of Ronkonkoma. Lo and behold, who partnered with her in some sort of capacity. Allegedly, the chief of the police department in James Burke. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And here we go. Now, let's jump around a little bit, John. So, you know, I had in my head here the 21st, which was 2 days ago, regarding a possible appellate decision. We talked about these tapes, Shannon Gilbert, the phone call, who has these tapes, if anything is on these tapes. The Suffolk County Police Department has not been forthcoming in any transparent fashion here regarding these tapes. They've certainly shied away from it, so to speak. You heard the press conference last week. Question was raised. They didn't want to really delve into it. Can you tell us anything? Has a decision been made as far as the releasing of these tapes? Did the appellate say anything to you?
The appellate division has not decided the case. They have 60 days from Tuesday to make that decision, so I don't know when they'll make it. But it, since it involves a mere discovery issue in the litigation I have against Dr. Peter Hackett, those cases are moved quickly. So once it's submitted to the court, so I expect a decision shortly. We don't know how the appellate division will handle it. I'm sure that they're quite aware of the public outcry about this. But by the way, you should know that another fascinating fact is that when Burke submitted his lawyer submitted his 80-some-odd page plea to the court for mercy when he was sentenced, part of that 80-page package was were exhibits of people who wrote in his favor and said what a great guy he was. One of those people who wrote was Heather Malone. So it's fascinating that that's in there. And by the way, he claimed that his greatest moment in his police career was when he recovered the bodies of the Flight 800 crash, the TWA crash off the coast of Shirley. And it's interesting because Dr. Peter Hackett also claimed his greatest achievement as the Suffolk County police surgeon was recovering the bodies off the coast of Shirley, the TWA crash. So they were there together, working together. So they do have a connection. So I don't know more than that, I mean, right now, but that's the way it is. And I want to say this to you, okay, and maybe to the public. You can see I have represented many, many people in this matter involving Burke, involving the Gilgo Beach, involving people that are connected to it or suspected of it. And I've represented witnesses. I've represented many prostitutes. You name it. I've done it. And I've done it pro bono because I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. So when people need help who are connected to this case, I step forward and I help them. And that's why I worked with Loretta, for example, and several other prostitutes, Leanne and several others besides that. So I'm there. If anybody has information that you know, where they themselves are involved in this matter and they want to talk to me, killer as well, come. I will be pro bono representing you. That's what I do. So that's how I'm doing my investigation. I'm not a cop, and I don't have many resources. I'm a tiny firm, although we take on some giant cases. So
one of the is the Wally Backman case, which I want to get into in a second. But absolutely, contact the Ray Mateva and Associates, and we'll see what happens. You know, one thing you mentioned, the 60 days. I mean, my goodness. Another waiting period. It's hard to believe. You know, now we got to wait another 60 days for the appellate to make a decision. It's crazy. It's crazy, the amount of wait time on this whole thing.
You know, if you take the fact that we were, for all the police knew, they were going to get a decision on Tuesday, and the Netflix movie Critical of the Police was coming out in February. Now it's been moved to March. So when the police called their press conference last Thursday, they had hanging over them the imminent fact that the cover-up would appear apparent if the appellate division agrees with the lower court and gives us the tapes and the Netflix movie, which is critical of the police. So perhaps that's why they decided to suddenly call their press conference when they did, just several days before that, and then suddenly started to sound like they were releasing information to the public. it could be nothing but a pablum, you know, as I called it, a pablum press conference or a placebo, you know, that they put out there. Or it could be something more intelligent. The police are not unintelligent. It could be that they put it out there to stir the pot and bait the killer or killers and get them, you know, scared or attempt to make them attempt to take some pride in what they did or he did. And this is another method that police use. So I don't know which it is. Everything's a mystery in these cases. Everything has dual meanings, and that's what happens here. You know, but the one meaning, you know, that's been utterly unexplored was the Mary Gilbert's background. And, you know, she's painted as an Erin Brockovich in the Netflix movie, but and the Netflix people wanted me to be part of that, and I refused. And they offered me money. I refused because Mary is portrayed as a heroine. Well, that's okay. That's a drama. It is a drama, after all, and they have the right to be artistic and make anything they want out of a drama. But it's not true to life. Mary's life was far different, you know, than that. She was a practicing black witch for 22 years with the license plate Wicca 22. And black witchcraft is much more heinous and nasty and ugly than just, you know, hippie-type Wicca-ism that's out there. So she was very often involved sexual, all kinds of sexual perversion and ritualistic sex. And these witch covens that exist, these people that join these things, very often they're good excuses for that. In addition, Mary, while she was doing that, her daughter Sarah grows up thinking her mother is a black witch. So, and while Sarah's growing up, Mary's boyfriend is having daily oral sex with Sarah Sarah's a little girl. And when Sarah reveals it to her mother, the boyfriend gets to stay in the house. Okay. Mary also was taking Shannon's earnings from prostitution. So there's a very different Mary Gilbert in this case. And Mary's my friend. I like Mary. I like my clients. I have murder clients. I like them too. I like those people because, you know, they're all children of God. They're all made in the image of God, and they still are, even if they have all kinds of evils in their background. And I got along very well with Mary, but I'm not going to deny what happened in Mary's life. That's why Sarah Gilbert killed her mother.
Let's not forget, please, the Suffolk County Police Department. I mean, they don't want any more egg on their face on this. That's why they rushed to get this press conference. This movie coming out, by the way, at Sundance next Tuesday. Netflix streaming it on March 13th. You know, we have all this going back and forth. The appellate date on the 21st. You know, they had a rush to the cameras, and right. And basically they gave you this thing. I mean, it was an obvious way of saying, you know what, I can't have any more egg on my face here. I'm just wondering, you know, are they ready to come forth with a second piece of evidence? I wouldn't be surprised with all that's going on here now. The affiliation of the belt and everything else, the HM Heather Malone stuff, Guy Malone interview with Frank McKay, I'm just wondering what's next as far as the police department gathering the cameras and the mics there.
They haven't come forward with the evidence at all. They've come forward with a picture of some evidence, and the picture was very limited, and they wouldn't describe or disclose anything else about the belt. So it was I don't know what it was. I don't know why that happened, but there it is. So hopefully it is a break. That's all we can pray, but that's up to the police, of course. But they really need to look at some of these other facts that I mentioned because they may be connected and they may not be, just as the belt may or may not be, you know, or the initials of Heather Malone may or may not be. But they should be looking at these other connections that I've just mentioned. They should have been looking at them. And they haven't. I mean, there are people in Oak Beach who were directly connected to the whole Gilbert matter. One young man who claimed to have seen her, along with his father, knocking on doors, and that he was there when she knocked on Barbara Brennan's door. He came and saw her soon after, and he told this to the New York Post, to Kieran Crowley of the New York Post, who's no liar. And Kieran wrote the story, and then the boy, when I took him under oath, he tried to change his story and said no, he didn't really say that Kieran Crowley was a liar, which was ridiculous, but he did say that. So what's the point? That point is that kid who became was a heroin addict, and got busted in New Jersey for drugs, The police never interviewed him once. Never once. How could that be? Why would they ignore that fellow, amongst many others? So,
not a question. Now, John, let me ask you. We got about a minute left.
Okay.
I know you're involved in the Backman case out in Riverhead. It seems that, Wally, you know, you look at the sloppy policing, you look at this unstable ex-girlfriend, Amanda Burns, you know, a long criminal record, by the way. It seems like the pendulum might have shifted here as far as in favor of Wally Backman. I mean, you know,
well,
the whole thing with the harassment and everything else. What do you think of that?
No, that's, you know, naturally the media, it's exciting. They're making it seem that way. That did not happen at all. The police officer who was cross-examined, just the standard things that he did, he made an arrest, and Wally admitted to him, and he testified, which did not make it to the media, that Wally had been drinking all night. So, I mean, and it's on the record. So it hasn't shifted. The whole case ultimately comes down to he said, she said. He doesn't have to come forward in the criminal case. She does. So in essence, the whole case in reality turns on the credibility of Amanda Burns. Okay? And Amanda, I've known Amanda since she was an infant. I knew her mother. I represented the family. So I'm representing Amanda on the civil case out there. Amanda's a credible person. She's had, tough bumps in her life, but she is the victim, and you don't put the victim on trial because of her past. Her past is not on trial. Her credibility is on trial. Every witness's credibility is always on trial in a case, and her credibility as to whether or not this happened, I think, will stand. We have only one juror on this case, and that's the judge. The judge is hearing the case without a jury. So, you know, it's all going to be whatever that judge thinks. But what happened to her that morning, I think, is pretty clear. And, the blood on her hands, that she gets cut from him when he twists her hand and then slams her up against the wall and knocks the pacemaker out of place in her chest, that's real. That happened. And there's two videos of Wally saying, I don't know, something along the lines, apologizing for what happened and then calling her filthy names. You can hear him on the tape. He sounds like his words are being slurred. He doesn't sound like, you know, he sounds like a guy who's been drinking all night, which is what he himself told the police. So I don't know where this thing shifted in any way whatsoever.
Well, let's see what happens. Backman has a checkered past as well, if they want to delve into backgrounds.
Right.
Listen, Backman is no choir boy, that's for sure. John, a pleasure. We'll await more information regarding Gilgo and talk soon. How's that?
All right, great. Great, Jay. Good to talk to you and to everybody.
As always. Thank you,
okay.
Sir. John Ray. John Ray checking in. And, listen, it keeps getting mysterious, folks. I'll tell you that much. It keeps getting mysterious.